Sushma Thalsari is a classical Indian dancer based in Boston, Massachusetts. Her professional dancing career and her LGBT activism spans more than two decades. Hi, Mesma.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Charlotte?
Very good, thank you. Tell us about your upcoming dance concert on February 7th at the Multicultural Arts Center in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
This is an evening-length concert of South Indian classical dance and music and is being made possible by a grant from the Cambridge Arts Council and the Massachusetts Arts Cultural Council. And we're also partnering with the South Asian Arts Council to present this evening. And the concert explores the theme of love as a universal theme from the carnal to the spiritual through the language of music, dance and poetry. The grant has allowed for research, translation and staging of some of the rare compositions that once upon a time graced the court and temple precincts of pre-colonial and colonial South India. And the evening is designed to create an immersive experience in the strictly classical idiom of music and dance, but at the same time to enable a contemporary viewer to relate through the lens of his or her own personal world references. So that, in a nutshell, I can say what it is about.
What is your inspiration for this performance?
Well, I should say that my inspirations have always been my gurus or my teachers who have guided me through my artistic journey and have given direction to my dreams. The inspiration, the singular inspiration, is the desire to say something unique through the medium of my expression, which is dance. And the idea is to revive some of the works which are rarely performed, but also to present them in a context that is relevant and interesting and communicative with the modern audience. The art of solo professional Bharatanatyam concert is becoming very rare outside what is called the Arangetram or debut performances by students of dance. And in a classical format, there's an arc of concepts that the artist presents through one body and one voice of the vocalist, in my case it being Bipira Navaratna, who is a chorus recipient of the grant as well. So we have worked together closely, and the inspirations have come from our own training, our own cultural backgrounds, and really finding a common ground for artistic expressions to make a difference.
What is your personal commitment to LGBT civil rights?
I think that every human being has the fundamental right to be happy and have a happy, productive life. I think LGBT rights are not some special rights. They are human rights, and they are inherent in our humanity. I think the idea of a separate category of rights for a certain group of people is quite baffling to me, as laughable as debating over whether people with red hair should have different rights than those with black hair. My personal commitment to these rights is through my work. I have strived to help people look beyond the classifications of gender or sexual identities to create work that defies being boxed into a, so to speak, ethnic artist, if you will. And I believe in crossing boundaries, but with appropriateness. I don't believe in sensationalism. For example, at the Albert Ellis Theater in 2008, I explored the symbolism of Kurukula in the Buddhist iconography in my work, Carmen Bees, where I applied classical texts that describe the beauty of a male god figure to a female goddess image. Then, on another occasion at the Age of Society, I danced to 12th century erotic poetry in Sanskrit written by a man. And expressed it through a woman's point of view. A couple of years ago at the MFA in Boston, I staged a production based on the women in the Persian epic, the Shahnameh, and then soon after I collaborated with two other artists to retell the stories of three women characters from the epic Ramayana from their own personal views and going beyond the patriarchal interpretations of the epic that we are so used to hearing. I've worked with theater actors, Western classical musicians, Western opera singers, puppeteers, modern dancers, and so on. But the underlying theme has always been to enable my audience members to look beyond the classifications that can often divide us into groups And it's the division that fuels the feud, if you will. And I must say that the LGBT community has been extremely generous in both its participation as audience members and their love and support for my work, because at times when you speak something which is out of the box, which is out of the ordinary, it's difficult to get people to understand it with a certain open-mindedness. So I'm very thankful to this community that has given me a lot of love and support, and I try to give back as much as possible through my work.
What was your reaction to Nepal's government now issuing citizenship certificates with the category of third gender for people who do not wish to be identified as male or female?
You know, Charlotte, I hesitate to answer this question because A, I'm not in Nepal, and B, I'm not a political activist. But I will say one thing. It certainly is a step in the right direction, or so it seems. But at the same time, classifying people into a third category, which further segregates them and further identifies them on paper as a third category classification, can have its benefits and its disadvantages at the same time. The benefit can be that you become eligible for certain government-issued benefits or rights. But at the same time, there's a change in attitude. You also become vulnerable to systemic discrimination or even abuse at times. So I don't know. To be honest, I don't know whether it's a good or a bad thing. But I think it is something, and it is a step in recognizing that this category exists and that something ought to be done. But I don't think that the work is done yet. That's my personal feeling about it.
What would you like to see the Obama administration accomplish for our LGBT community in the next 4 years?
I think that President Obama's open public support of LGBT people is an affirmation of this country's progressive direction, especially among the youth. The fact that he had to be so calculating in his support during his first term was an unfortunate reality, and that probably incensed many people. But I know that a country cannot make progress if we are honoring the fundamental rights of its people in a way that is not uniform. And the United States is no exception to that rule. In an ideal world, I would like the president to take measures to enable the country to treat LGBT people equally in all aspects of life. Only then can we espouse a change in attitude and perception towards people. And I really am hopeful that the current administration will put these debates to rest so that we can move forward, because we have so many other issues on a global level to tackle. Quite honestly, I find it not a very productive debate in terms of making progress, because we are not making progress if we are still debating over this.
LGBTQ teens are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers, and numerous teens continue to take their own lives after facing bullying incidents. What advice would you have for these kids?
You know, people's circumstances are different, and I don't want to generalize what drives them to taking extreme measures. But there is a general rule for all youth in particular, whether or not they are susceptible and vulnerable to bullying or any other kind of oppression or abuse. When you are a teenager, it is important that you find something that inspires you and seek out people whom you look up to. These people need not be from your family or school or in your close social circles even, but they are usually people who are passionate about what they do. It is very important to inherit that passion in your life. And once you have found it, it makes you unique. And you gain insurmountable strength that enables you to look for constructive solutions. And this could, and usually it means that you have to free yourself from peer pressure and learn to be okay with standing alone. Now, it's not easy and it takes time, but once you have it, it will stay with you for the rest of your life. And you will realize that there is only one of you in this world. And if that one is not fulfilled, then that's a huge loss. But most importantly, it teaches you to have faith, which is of utmost importance. I think that's my only advice to LGBT youth who are and do often face these challenges.
How can people get information about your performances?
Well, they can either go to my website. It's www.mesmabelsare.com, or join my mailing list through my website. My website usually has an updated information about my events, or they can talk to you, Charlotte.
What other projects are you working on?
Well, work never stops. And as sensitive artists, we are constantly inspired and take in the world at all the time, whether it's good and it's bad. And you're always working on honing your skills, testing your creativity, and expanding your vision in your work. I'm currently working on many projects that integrate pan-Indian musical traditions in my work, especially those that are not conventionally represented or applied to Bharatanatyam. I'm also working on ways to represent progressive sensibilities in both historical and contemporary South Asia through my work. And there are several projects that are, you know, in the making at the moment.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
I do wish that people would let more art in their lives. There is much instability, mistrust, and atrocity all over the world that we are currently living in. And I believe that the arts have a unique power to bring us closer to our human selves and make us more empathetic to the human condition of the others. Now, dance is my language. It is the medium with which I communicate. And if I can bring my audience that much closer to themselves through this medium, that will make me very happy.
Do you have a favorite quote, a mantra to get you through difficult times?
It's only dance that gets me through difficult times, whether it's on stage or in the studio. That space is sacred to me. It's a religion of thought, if you will. And by that definition, I'm very religious. And there's a particular quote by Martha Graham that inspires me quite a bit, although there are many such quotes, but I will pick this one for now. She says, quote, "I believe that we learn by practice, whether it means to learn to dance by practicing dance or to learn to live by practicing living. The principles are the same. In each, it is the performance of a dedicated, precise set of acts, physical or intellectual, from which comes shape of achievement, a sense of one's being, a satisfaction of spirit. One becomes, in some area, an athlete of God," unquote. That means that life and art are inseparable, that in order to live life fully, you have to make an effort, you have to build your strength, you have to make yourself ready for any circumstances that may come, whether good or bad. And practicing art enables you to do that in a very systematic, methodical, and rewarding way. There's great joy in it, and that's where I make the distinction between having fun and deriving joy, because they're two different things. And had it not been for an artistic practice that I engender in my everyday life, I don't think I would have had the kind of strength and the kind of determination to get through the difficult times that you mentioned earlier. And I think that's what Martha Graham is talking about here. In order to transcend the mundane, you have to look beyond, you have to search, and that search takes time and discipline.